How you doing, Johnny?
I'm doing outstanding, Boom. Whenever I get to talk to you, it's a highlight. You know, I miss you, buddy.
Really? Highlight. Wow, that's cool. I would say this is the biggest game of the year for the Los Angeles Kings so far, and history suggests they play their best hockey when the money's on the table.
Well, wow. Don't call out the spotlights or anything to draw any extra attention to this matchup. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the LA Kings and the Vancouver Canucks, they hate each other. And we've gone through this over the last couple of years, Boom, where people try to hype up the Ducks versus the Kings, but in reality, inside that Kings locker room, they really dislike the San Jose Sharks and, of course, the Vancouver Canucks. And this matchup in particular, this is the first of several matchups here over the final couple weeks of the season, and it really is going to determine whether the LA Kings, and for that matter, whether the Vancouver Canucks make the postseason this year.
Where does that hate come from? Does it go back to that first-round matchup in 2012 that the Kings won in five games, or was it before that even?
It actually was before that, because the year before, the Kings had an opportunity to make some noise in the playoffs, and they were eliminated by Vancouver, actually 2 years before that, excuse me. And there was one point in the game in Los Angeles, for example, where the Kings were up by several goals, and they had an opportunity to really put that series away, and Vancouver ended up finishing them off. So it's just they don't like the way that Vancouver has played the game traditionally. I mean, we all know what that means, you know, the diving and the embellishments and some of the things that aren't necessarily there under Coach Willie Desjardins. There's been a little bit of a culture change and a little bit of a personnel change there as well. But by and large, you run through the laundry list of players there from the Sedins to Edler to Ham Hughes and all those guys. There were some tough battles that has kind of been taken over by their rivalry with the San Jose Sharks, the two teams that have played each other more than any other in the National Hockey League over the last 3 years. But still, there is some underlying hate there for the Vancouver Canucks. And I think you also have, just like you do with NoCal and SoCal, you also have that kind of Western Canada, war, if you will, a feud between Southern California and kind of who's better, you know, who has the better water and the better lifestyle and all that sort of good stuff.
I'd go to SoCal myself, but that's just my take. No offense, Vancouver. What is your take on Andre Sequeira in the short term and how he's been able to integrate himself into that Kings blue line?
You know, it's so funny, Boom, how people's reaction and you know, kind of acceptance of Andre Sequeira changes. You know, this Twitter world that we live in now is pretty crazy, and I can't even believe some of the things that I was seeing in social media over after his first couple of games. You know, he's a waste. What a terrible trade. They overpaid to get him. He's a bum. You know, just all sorts of overreaction to a guy who, you know, has played his entire career in the Eastern Conference and really needed to adjust to a new system under Coach Daryl Sutter, and also was being asked to move from the left side where he had primarily played in Carolina over to the right side in Los Angeles. So a lot of things that needed to be worked out. And sure, the first couple games were rough. And then to actually see people tweeting me after the game the other night saying that it was Andre Sequeira's best game and, you know, applauding him. And then Daryl Sutter, you know, congratulating him and calling him out after the game. You know, it's just the highs and lows of things. The reality is the Kings' defensive pairings are an absolute disaster at the particular moment. You have Drew Doughty, who you've been mentioning all year long, is playing more than 30 minutes a game. They needed to get a second pairing. That's what the Sequeira trade was all about. They needed to get a second pairing in order to be able to reduce Doughty's minutes, and it just really, as of yet, hasn't happened and things haven't settled down. They're a very lefty-heavy lineup. You have Regier, you have McNabb, you have Green, etc., and they have to figure out how to put some pairings together, and it just really hasn't happened as of yet, but we'll see if the game the other night in Colorado was step one of, you know, a forward path here as we continue over the final month of the season.
And I read earlier from the legal filings, the chances of seeing Voinov again this year are basically non-existent now that we're dragging our feet on this court case, correct?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how things have turned here over the last month or so. You know, the case, which was originally set to begin, of all days, on the NHL trade deadline of March 2nd, was then originally pushed back a week, and now it's been pushed back into late April before they're even going to begin jury selection and all that sort of thing. So, obviously, things could, you know, take even more dramatic turns. Tomorrow, later this afternoon, for that matter, we could hear of a plea deal. It doesn't look like one's on the horizon, but, you know, stranger things have taken place before. So barring a plea deal, though, that trial is going to begin, and, you know, that's going to go a couple weeks. And so, yeah, it's just you're not going to see Slava Voinov more than likely back in the National Hockey League anytime soon, you know, this year or in the postseason. And then as the outcome of that case takes place, then you have to figure out what the NHL is going to do, if they're going to impose any additional length to his already ongoing suspension.
Hey, we all know there are two Jeff Carters. There's the Jeff Carter that's the hottest scorer in the NHL, and then there's the Jeff Carter that goes on a milk carton for 2 months, and we've seen both of him a couple times this year. He's cranking it up again. Carter's playing good hockey right now, and how's Dwight King fitting in on that line with him and Toffoli?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, Dwight King, one of the famous or infamous whipping boys of the LA Kings fan base, and for, you know, deserved reason. I mean, you know, the guy was so hot when they called him up in 2012 and they went on that cup run after a really unassuming call-up the year before for his cup of coffee in the National Hockey League. And then, you know, pretty much has been non-existent over the last couple of years, barring an odd game or two here or there. You know, he gets plugged in there when Tanner Pearson on that line with Toffoli and Carter, when Tanner Pearson goes down with a broken leg and played, you know, pretty well. Has had some good games and some good stretches and certainly hasn't held that line back. So the real question is that Tanner Pearson, who's now skating and is, you know, on his way to a full recovery here and expected back in the next couple of weeks, most likely, what's going to happen with Dwight King at that point? And it kind of ties in with the first line as well. Dwight King, Trevor Lewis, you know, Kyle Clifford, they're all among a number of guys that have been tried out there on the top line with Kopitar and Gabrick, when primarily that's been reserved for Justin Williams and Dustin Brown, you know, over the last year or so. Sutter's been trying to use a myriad of guys up there to get things going, to get a second line. Really, this has been a one-line offensive team for most of the year. So the real questions around Dwight King would center on that return of Tanner Pearson and what's going to happen. Who knows? When you're dealing with Daryl Sutter, you could see Tanner Pearson possibly playing up on that top line with Kopitar and Gabbert. Who knows?
Haven't you always advocated, though, it should be Dustin Brown on that top line?
I absolutely do. And if you watch the play of Justin Williams with Kopitar and Gabbert versus the play of Dustin Brown with Kopitar and Gabbert, what you'll see is that Kopitar is a better player with Dustin Brown, because Brown goes into the dirty areas. He goes into the corners. He fetches the puck. He gets the puck. And he gives the puck back to Kopitar, which forces him to shoot. When Kopitar's out there with two goal scorers like Gabbert and with Williams, what Kopitar tends to do is pass the puck. He doesn't shoot the puck enough. And you can just look at the stats that'll bear this out, as well as the eye test of watching the games. And so you don't get the offensive production that you need from Andrei Kopitar when he's playing with Justin Williams and Marian Gabrick. And so that's why I've always advocated you get the best Dustin Brown when he's up there on that top line, and you also get the best Andrei Kopitar. And I still believe, until proven wrong, I still believe that Daryl Sutter in his heart of heart knows this and will go back to that Gabrick, Kopitar, Brown line come the postseason, provided the Kings make it.
And explain this one to the listeners, because I'm still trying to catch up on it. The forgotten man, Mike Richards in Manchester. What's going on right now?
You know, back to the Andre Sequeira thing and Twitter and how social media overreacts to everything. The Mike Richards story has been absolutely fascinating. Earlier this week, just a few days ago here in the last 48 hours, Mike Richards returned to Los Angeles. He did not travel with the Manchester Monarchs, his AHL club. As weird as that still sounds, he didn't travel with his AHL club to St. John's to play a three-game series there. He came back to L.A. because the team wanted to evaluate him, do some private testing, some private training, test his baselines, see where he was at, his physical conditioning, to make a further evaluation of what the next step is for Mike Richards. As I mentioned to you, Boom, I think right after the trade deadline, certainly wrote a lot about the plan was and always has been that Mike Richards would be called back up late in the year going into the postseason, provided that everything else was kind of, you know, A-OK, if you will. And so that's what this test has been part of. In checking with a lot of the King sources here over the last couple of days and talking to a lot of my contacts, there's nothing more to the story other than this was just part of the process. They wanted to check in on Richards and see where he's at and also not risk the allow him to be in a situation where potentially he could be injured. You know, he's played 16 games, I believe it is now, in the AHL. So he's gone there. He's shown what he can do. He's been playing more minutes. He's put up 14 points in those 16 games. And now it's time to kind of evaluate where he's at kind of on the off-ice stuff before you make a determination of plugging him back in the lineup. But here's the thing, Boom, to really keep in mind. Everybody back then, Kings fans, were all over Mike Richards and couldn't wait to get him out of the lineup. And he was terrible, and he was causing all kinds of problems. And, you know, he was messing up the line combinations, and he was taking valuable minutes from young guys like Nick Shore. Now, all of a sudden, the guy's been away, and you look at the poll that's up on Mayor's Manor right now, and 80% of the people say that the Kings should call him up. You know, they can't wait to get Mike Richards back. They love Mike Richards. Here's the reality, though, Boom. the reality is you have to look at the stats and you have to go back and watch some of that game film. What was Mike Richards giving you in 2015, in late 2014 even, compared to what he was giving you a couple years ago? And there was a great tweet that went out this morning talking about, you know, from the Boston Bruins that, you know, heart and that work ethic is more important than size and skill. And, you know, you and I have talked about this before. I'll always take that heart and soul guy, whether it's a Dustin Brown or Ian LaPerriere or one of those guys, over somebody who's naturally skilled because of their work ethic. And that's what Mike Richards gave you back in the day. He outworked everybody. And whether it's the big contract, whether it's the winning two Stanley Cups, whatever it is, the work ethic, call it foot speed, call it whatever you want, but the work ethic just hasn't been there, as evidenced by his off-season conditioning.
Yeah,
he promised he was going to come back this year in the best condition possible. He didn't. By contrast, look at a guy like Dustin Brown. Team captain, just got paid with a huge contract, two Stanley Cups. He had every reason in the world not to come in great shape into training camp. And you know what he did? He came in the best training camp shape of his life. It just tells you kind of where two guys are mentally. They're at different points in their career.
Yeah, and I just don't buy the comeback. They're out of the same draft, same age. I just think that the Kings emasculated Mike Richards in a big way, sending him down. It was just hard for me to envision a scenario where he'd put on a Kings jersey again. But I might be wrong about that. I guess we're going to find out. I got 10 seconds before I let you go. I'm going to be in Pittsburgh all weekend, so I probably will miss the UFC card. Anyway, Showtime Pettis gets beat?
It's always possible. Certainly, Dos Anjos has a chance. But no, I think that the guy to beat Pettis would have been Gilbert Melendez, and he destroyed Gil, so you have to think that Pettis is going to win this weekend, as well as Johnny Hendricks.
Interesting. Thanks a lot for the time, John. Enjoy the game this evening.
All right, Boone. Talk soon.